This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. North Korea is expelling the inspectors who monitor its nuclear facilities. The head of the United Nations agency that's trying to keep watch on North Korea's nuclear capabilities condemned both that decision and North Korea's announcement that it is dismantling monitoring equipment at the Yongbyon reactor. Foreign officials say that facility is capable of producing weapons-grade plutonium. North Korea's decision to reactivate the plant is sending a chill through much of the world at year's end. Earlier this week, U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said that no military action against North Korea was imminent, but he cautioned North Korea that the United States is militarily capable of fighting two major regional conflicts at the same time. Now, South Korea's government says that more diplomatic efforts are needed. And with us in the studio to discuss the growing tensions on the Korean Peninsula is Ellen Lapson, who is president of the Henry L. Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. Ms. Lapson, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
And maybe we could benefit by taking at least half a step back, because I think a year ago, much of the world seemed to think that North Korea's regime was a danger to North Korea's people, but that, in a sense, it had been successfully bought off in its effort to develop terrible weapons. What's happened?
The mutual accusations that we've heard in the last few weeks actually have to go back a few months ago to when the United States learned that the North Koreans had begun a second nuclear program, a uranium-based program that is outside of the arrangements that are called the agreed framework, agreed between North Korea and the United States in 1994. Since then, the United States has taken some steps to declare North Korea in non-compliance. The North Koreans have countered with the accusation that it is we, not they, who have broken the terms of the agreement. But the North Koreans have clearly taken several rather assertive steps in just the last week of a series of measures to step away from the commitments they had made in 1994, and we are now facing the ominous prospect of them being able to recapture plutonium from rods that had been frozen under the 1994 agreement, possibly resume production of a plutonium-based nuclear program, and according to the real experts, could, in fact, complete work on weapons in no more than 6 to 12 months.
What's your analysis, Ms. Lapson? Is this a particularly menacing game of shakedown where the North Korean regime just hopes the rest of the world will ante up a huge amount of money?
Certainly, that's an important dimension to it. This is North Korea's perhaps clumsy way of interacting with the international community and getting the rich countries of the world to re-engage with what is clearly a struggle for survival, an economic struggle for survival in North Korea. One also has to factor in the recent presidential elections in South Korea and whether the North Koreans could be calculating that they have a different partner in the South to work with. President-elect No Moo-hyun, a partner that at least during the campaign appeared willing to take a more independent posture vis-a-vis the United States. What in fact has happened is that the president-elect has found himself condemning the North Korean actions as extremely unhelpful to the stability of the region.
And how has that stability been affected even in the past few weeks?
There's a couple of things. One, first of all, I think it sends a shiver through the South Koreans and the Japanese, by the way, to hear that the IAEA inspectors are no longer welcome to do the monitoring job that they had been doing. So that
this
you
is
have
atomic energy.
The International Atomic Energy Agency. But equally, along the demilitarized zone, the United States military command that monitors, has a very strong presence in South Korea, just this week has been observing that the North Koreans are doing some unusual maneuvers of positioning weapons during the day, removing them at night, and this is now being called a violation of the much older agreement, the agreement that governs the demilitarized zone between the two parts of Korea. One clearly has the impression that the North Koreans are in a very proactive mode trying to get our attention and to begin some kind of a process. They want to engage with us. The Bush administration has put the burden on them to cease their behavior before it will consider or entertain any re-engagement at the purely political level.
We need to talk about Iraq this week because, of course, UN weapons inspections continue there. We've had some disagreement between Iraq, the United Nations, and the United States and Britain over the accessibility of Iraqi bomb scientists. And this week, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Red Lubbers, urged the international community to find some kind of an agreement. How do you assess the possibility of, if not an agreement, some sort of event occurring that will forestall military action?
Clearly, part of what the administration is doing is not only preparing quite seriously for military options, but hoping that a psychological and political dynamic will be generated where Iraqis themselves will take greater risks, hoping to forestall or prevent military action that could lead to some civilian casualties and hardship. So there's no way to predict how this chemistry of different personalities and different motivations of people that are close to Saddam will play out. But certainly one can hope that one of the nicer scenarios would be if change were to occur at the hand of Iraqis themselves and that military action would not be required.
We're almost exactly a month away from the report that the weapons inspectors are scheduled to give to the UN Security Council. How would you assess the strength of the coalition the United States seemed to put into place to get that vote out of the UN Security Council?
Well, the political coalition in New York really was limited to the key members of the Security Council, so we're talking about a finite number of countries. I think it gets much harder and much more complicated when one tries to imagine a smaller set of countries, perhaps, who would actually commit their own military forces to a coercive disarmament of Iraq.
Ms. Lapson, thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.
Ellen Lapson is president of the Henry L. Stimson Center in Washington, D.C. She's former vice chair of the National Intelligence Council.